All right, guys, welcome back to another episode of the Onside Inside podcast. I'm your host, Corey Tompkins, and today we're honored to have Mitchell Reardon, founder of Top Build Group, joining us today. Mitchell's path to success in the construction industry wasn't a straightforward one. Starting from a place of uncertainty and doing odd jobs, he eventually overcame the odds and established his own thriving company. Mitchell, thank you for coming in today. I know this is your first one, and I know there's obviously jitters, but don't fucking stress about it.
We've popped the podcast cherry.
So we're very relaxed here. And as I said to you off camera, we're basically just having a chit chat today, yeah. and just trying to get some insight for the listeners that are listening. So for you guys that are listening today, buckle in. Mitchell's got a hell of a story to share with you guys, and some tips and tricks, and we'll discuss it along the way. So Mitchell, just start. Give our listeners just a bit of a a bit of a backstory about you, a bit of a brief on how you started in carpentry or in the industry at all, you know, your journey to get there, and obviously, you know, a bit of a brief on where you're at now.
Yep. So back after high school, didn't really have much of a plan. I kind of just hung around till grade 12 just to go to schoolies, so didn't really have any aspirations per se. Didn't have like, oh, that's what I want to do. Oh, I want to go to uni. I want to do this. I didn't really have that all figured out yet. I was just working at the local pub down at Sanford doing the glassy thing.
Yeah.
Finished high school, basically just kept doing the pub thing.
Yeah.
And then got to a point where I was like, right, okay, I'd probably need a bit more of a steady income. Yeah. Worked for my dad in
at what age were you when that sort of clicked?
So I finished high school, turned 17 when I finished high school. So I was probably about, I don't know, 8 and a half. I needed to obviously afford my party,
yeah,
and
own,
I needed to afford, needed to get a job. So I worked for my dad for a little bit, but doing that kind of just butted heads, don't really mesh well.
What were you guys doing?
So dad at the time owns a printing company.
Yeah.
So I was just working the machines there, like the big presses and all that stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, a bit mind numbing, a bit boring. Mate at the time, he was doing the carpentry apprenticeship from school, and basically kind of just drove me in that direction. So we were just coming out of the GFC at the time, so there was a bit of a low point. So it was pretty hard to get an apprenticeship.
Yeah.
So I think it took about eight, nine months of going to, you know, the apprenticeship companies, hitting up builders, got a labouring job in the meantime, and we were getting paid and cartons of rum and coke to go to the south side of Brisbane because it wasn't close to where we lived. So we had a good little setup with that mob, obviously getting paid as well, but we were getting paid pretty well at the time. I think it was like $25-$30 an hour.
So you hadn't started your apprenticeship?
No. So you're still looking around, working for this labor hire company. They were like, oh, look, we'll try and put you in touch with some builders along the way. But, you know, so we were laying grass, we were unloading
just
shipping containers.
Bases,
just random shit like that. Finally got a builder that would take me on. So we got into new homes.
Yeah. What age were you when that happened?
Would have been 19.
Yeah.
19 when I finally got an apprenticeship organized. Yeah. So hit the ground running there. Worked with him for about a year. It was pretty full on. Mm-hmm. I remember like turning up for the very first day and the concreters were doing meth outside the slab, you know. It was like, what the hell have I walked into kind of thing. And obviously, you know, in that new home construction phase, it's, you know, fast paced, it's, you know, full on, you know, knock the frame up by 10 a.m. trusses are coming at 11, you know, the normal shit. So you do get a good all-around kind of knowledge of how, you know, a home works, obviously, by doing that. But I think over that year, I was probably, you know, the runt of the litter. There was 5 of us blokes, I think, working there at the time. And I was, you know, 67 kilos. I'm not the tallest bloke in the world. Like, you know, it was pretty hard. You know, I obviously wasn't the most popular.
And how did you go about that? Was that, you know, because obviously you could have done electrical, plumbing, anything and everything. Was it just your mate that sort of did you trial anything else? Or was it just thought, fuck it, like it's
just... It was just him, and, you know, he probably sold a good story, like, you know, oh, you know, when we're finished we can, you know, work together, rah. I was like, yeah, cool. Yep. You know, we lived next door to each other, we were best mates.
Yeah,
and I was
right, like, sweet.
Yeah, so it kind of just worked out.
Yeah.
That I was like, you know, fuck it, what else have I got to lose? You know, I'll just start this. And you know, it was a hard 2 years, there was points there that, you know, you'd go home and you'd be almost like in tears from being, you know, treated like, you know, shit. You know, there was like, what, instances of getting like pushed off the trestles, like hosed down in the middle of winter, you know, clothes stripped off you, you know, just that general shit. Like, I guess if that happened nowadays, you'd probably be...
You'd hear about it. Yeah. If it happened these days, TikTok's a wonderful thing.
So I did
pull their phone out next to you.
With a lot of shit. And then I got sacked, I think, because it got to the point where I think the boss, like the other employee who was kind of doing it, it was kind of like, you know, he couldn't keep it, us both there. So we both got the flick. And then I ended up just kind of floating around, I guess, from builders to builders for a bit.
Yeah, so you were halfway through that apprenticeship at that point.
Yeah, I was about, a year and a half in, then got into maybe another two builders.
Yeah.
And then finally settled with a bloke over in Chermside, and he was doing basically renos and like school buildings.
Yeah.
So stuck with him, and I kind of... From that, he probably pushed me in the direction of like, you know, right, let's actually teach you something. Because I didn't get taught, you know, I got taught the basic. Like, you know, I only had like a couple of tools, a nail bag, but, you know, I barely got those out, you know, because it was just.
So he paid him pure much said, he said, listen, like, this is all fun and games at the moment, but are you going to actually make a career out of this, or are you just going to.
And so stuck with Sean, completed my apprenticeship with Sean. And then it was basically kind of like just went right, sink or swim.
Yep.
Right, you know, this is you now, you're qualified, so I expect, you know, you to pull your socks up and get the job done. So it was basically just thrown out the big bad world and then just see what happens from then. And you know,
did you find that the process was hard the more that you jumped in between from builder to builder during your apprenticeship? That it was a lot harder to get a re-sign up?
I didn't have trouble getting signed up. I think it was the fact that from that previous experience, I was probably a little bit more like, I didn't probably know what to expect because of how it was that first year, 2 years of my apprenticeship. Like, you know, I wasn't guided. I wasn't taught things. Like, it was kind of like you were just, you know, this,
you were not there.
Even laborer. It was like, you know, you were just the bottom of the run type of thing. So I guess I learned more for myself after my apprenticeship than I did any time during my apprenticeship.
Yeah.
Being pushed out the bad world and going, right, you've got to...
They do say that. They say just as long as you're in an apprenticeship, it takes you just that much... It takes you that same amount of time to actually become qualified again.
Oh, 100%.
And once you get signed off, you know, that 3-4 year apprenticeship, once you're qualified, it's another 3-4 years.
Yeah.
And then you're actually in your stride and you're away.
And then, it was... Like that pushing, you know, that sink or swim mentality, you know, if I stuffed up, it was coming out of my pocket to fix it, you know. I was there after work to fix it. So it just kind of got that in your mindset, right, you know.
Yeah.
Problem solving, it like you may just sit there and go, right, how can I approach this job? How can I get this job done correctly so I'm not coming back to fix it? You know, this has to be done right straight away. So, you know, you have to work out the, you know, best course of action to get to that point.
Yeah.
So I do credit Sean a lot with helping me. Yeah.
And were you on an ABN at that point, or were you just currently...
On ABN. So as soon as I got qualified, he pushed me over to get the contractor's license. Yep. So I did all that, the small business course and all that straight after that. Got all that worked out, public liability, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
All that done. And then, worked with Sean for a little bit after, probably about 2 years after my apprenticeship.
Yeah.
And then a good mate of mine, his father used to coach us in football. He was a builder. And we were just chatting and whatnot, and he offered me a job, and that's really when I hit my stride with him.
Yep.
Because of just the general person that he is, that, you know, he was stern, but he knew how to guide you properly.
The leadership, aspect of him, yeah.
And like from him, it was just like from, you know, just good stride to next stride.
Yeah,
and it just took me to that new point where it was like, I was running jobs, I was, you know, organizing trades, I was, you know, and it was really...
He gave you the stepping stones.
And I really found myself there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you went back to Mitch as an apprentice and said, this is where you're going to be, I wouldn't I wouldn't have believed you.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of that has to do with like where I am now is probably the driving force is like how it was back then and what I was told, like, you know, you won't be anything, you know, you quit now, you know, you're wasting everyone's time. And it was that drive then has got me to this point as well, because it's like, it's not like a screw you, you know, this is what I've got, but it kind of is as well. Mm. It's like that, you know, just to show them, like, if I could have them in a room right now and show, look what I've got.
Yeah.
And where, you know, where are you?
100%. You're almost like trying to prove, you're not trying, but you're sort of proving it to yourself a little bit as well.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, I can definitely resonate with that. You know, same sort of deal. Obviously, I did my apprenticeship a little bit later on. But, you know, 100%. The common, you know, as guys know now, that between, you know, literally, I was speaking about it the other day. What it's like now versus what it was like then, you know, and this isn't one of those cases where it's like back in my day, it's just the clear representation. It's, you know, social media, there's all this other stuff going on now. So it's a lot, not more difficult to get away with it, but a lot of guys aren't doing it the way that they used to. You know, back then it was very common for qualified guys to say to apprentices and that, like, listen, just fucking quit, mate. Like there was no encouragement to stay in it. They was almost like, you know, you're not built for this, you know, blah, blah, blah. It was all that mentality. And for the most part, I've had guys even now starting up with us that have still got that happening amongst the community. And I just, it's just shocking. So, yeah, for the, you are sort of trying to prove it, prove yourself and yeah, like say fuck you to those guys. Yeah. That, you know, that's pretty much what you're doing.
But, yeah, and then from that, I got to...
So how long were you with him?
I was with Mick for about 4 years.
Still on ABN?
Yeah. So basically from the time I was qualified, I've been on ABN ever since. So
yeah.
I've never been a... I haven't been an employee since I was, an apprentice. So yeah, all that sick leave, holiday pay, all that stuff like that, I haven't had that benefit.
Still don't have it.
No, I still don't have it, even as a boss. No. I was with him about 4 years. He helped me get my builder's license. So
beautiful.
Whatever it is.
On how the was PVC. That?
Yeah, it was good. I'm glad I did it when I did it. So that was in 2018.
Yeah.
I went for my builder's
ticket. Roundabout, yeah.
So
still difficult, like even back 100%, then.
100%. I think I would have spent probably about 35 hours like write everything out, especially because it's all handwritten and it's like, you know, not just on the internet, you know, typing it out.
I did mine, I had to do mine 3 times, so I got knocked back twice and on the final time, that was it. My final time, I literally had it, it was about this thick. I had all the, it was literally like a book of just like, that's how it was written. Jobs, references, everything. And I just said to myself at that point, I was like, listen, if this gets knocked back,
I'm done. I submitted it all that first time. And I think when I first got the application, by the time I submitted it, it might have been like 2 months, 3 months had passed. Yeah. And by the time I submitted it, they changed the qualifications. And so I had to go back and redo to suit their new terms and whatnot. So then I had to take the document back, spend another 15 hours rewriting it to suit their new, you know, qualifications, whatever it is, and then submit it. But then you hear about blokes nowadays and all the work they've got to do. Like, I'm glad I got it when I got it. It just seems like it's 3 times as hard, which it should be.
It should be hard. You like, know, don't get me wrong, but I feel like as time goes on, it's only going to get more difficult and difficult, and it will get to a point where the market's capped, like no one else is going to get it, and then it's going to be like, oh, well, fuck, we need more builders and stuff. Yeah. So it's catch 22. You want to make it difficult, but you also want to make it achievable.
Yeah, 100%. So it's like, 100%,
I was literally speaking to a guy the other day about, so he's currently doing his certificate and whatever. When I did mine, I actually did a diploma of building construction. So I skipped the certificate four and it covers the certificate four.
Yeah.
Now he had a look. It's actually like a 2.5 year course to do your diploma, and you can't actually do a diploma unless you have your certificate four. They've changed the requirements. And I said, because I remember saying to him, and he rang me and he was like, oh, you said this. And I said, yeah, that's what I did. I said, I did night school for about 12 months and that's how I got it. And he goes, oh no, they don't even offer, you can't even get in without your certificate four. And I was like, oh. And I had a look, I jumped on the computer, he sent me the link, and I was like, oh, they've fully changed the requirement.
Yeah, I did the surf four was like 2 nights a week at the Chelmside Bowls Club. We used to get like the the bowls club to make your dinner, so you'd be sitting there with your steak listening to the teacher go on.
Now write this down, boys.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, this is the answer to page six. That was good, but it was, you know, again, everyone's like, oh, when you do a builder's, like, when you do the cert four, is it like full on with building? You're like, it's just like health and safety.
It's got nothing to do.
You're not being actually taught anything different with building or construction. It's all just compliance and health and safety and all that jazz.
Certifications and everything like that.
So it wasn't a hard, you know, 12 months.
It's not hard, but I feel like the thing that I find with guys that don't want to do it now is, as I say to them, technically learning it, it's not hard. It's the commitment. You know, they don't want to go that 2-3 nights a week. Like, they can't commit.
But if you commit now, and you know, at least by the time you know, in a year's time, it'll be finished. But you get to a year's time, you go, gee, I wish I did that, because I would have had it by now.
Literally say to all the guys, like, once you finish your apprenticeship, do your certificate four right then and there. Like, get it done. The sooner you can do it, because life gets in the way. You get married, you get kids.
Oh, 100%, yeah.
You know, shit gets busy. You don't, like, there is no way in the world right now that I could go back to doing a diploma at night school. No fucking way that could be done right now. Yeah. That's just sheer facts. I would have to wait like 10 years and then do it. So it's like,
the worst bloke in the world when you got home.
Exactly. So it's like, you know, for you guys that are listening, if you guys are contemplating, if you guys are coming out of your apprenticeship, or even if you're in your apprenticeship and, you know, you're about to come qualified, fucking get in, do your certificate, get it done, and that's it.
Is it all still funded?
CSQ, yeah. You can, depending on who you
are. I paid like $250.
It's fuck all. It's fuck all. You rock up, you meet a few guys, and you just go there, you know what I mean? Get in, get it done, finished, finito. You don't need to worry about it. Once it's finished, forget about it. You never have to worry about studying again.
Yeah.
But if you don't, you'll just go on better money, you'll cruise around, and then three years will fly by, you'll meet a pretty lady, and then next thing you know, you got no time, and then you don't want to do it, and then you're fucking kicking yourself because you want to progress through your career, you want to get off the tools, you want to become a builder.
Then you'll hit that ceiling, and you'll be that 50-year-old guy going, oh, I used to run 16
Exactly, blokes. Exactly. So, you know, but yeah. So, fast forwarding, so you did that, you worked with...
Mick.
You worked with Mick, you did all that.
Yeah.
And then at what point, what was the cross in the road when you started up Top Build? How did all that fucking eventually?
So we had Top Build Construction, so that was my little name that I came up with when I first got my ABN and all that stuff like that. So did that. I remember drawing the logo on Microsoft Paint and going, yay, and like cut copy and put it by the invoice, like acted all professional.
Yeah.
And then I think the driving force was around COVID, I met my future wife, and she was kind of like the driving force behind it, because she's an accountant by trade. So it was kind of like, it was just that natural progression, having Hazel there in the background.
Yeah.
You know,
she's not going to let you get away with
No. And she worked at like, you know, oh, look, it's, you know, better for you to have a company, because you have a company, your assets are protected, so let's get you a company. So we got the company sorted, done that. And then it was like, right, you got your builder's license. Let's get the builder's license attached to the company, you know, become a nominee supervisor, And then it all just started happening like that. And I was still working for Mick, and I'd taken on a couple of jobs that I'd just gotten through just friends of friends. And I'd gotten a chippy, and he was doing the jobs while I was working for Mick.
Yeah.
And then I was also planning all the trades in the meantime. So I was still working full time for Mick, but having these two or three jobs going on in the background where I'd like finish at 3 o'clock here, drive over there, do the demo, whatnot. So I'd had like... So they kind of, it got to a point where it was just more jobs were coming in through the word of mouth from that.
Yeah.
And it just kind of came to a point where I was like, I think I can actually make the jump and, you know, let's do this. So, you know, obviously Mick was all, you know, go get it.
All right, guys, congratulations. You're halfway through this episode. I hope you guys are really enjoying it. But first, I just want to make a special thank you to Ideal Group Australia. Without them, I wouldn't be able to bring this podcast to you. So special thank you. I hope you guys are enjoying it. Buckle in and get ready to listen to the end of this episode. Were you very much, because I get a lot of guys like DM us and stuff in regards to, you know, how do you get clients? How do you make that jump? You know, you're literally listening to it right now. Like, this is similar to like my story. It's same sort of thing. You know, for me, same. I was subbing to someone, jobs on weekend, jobs after hours, got an apprentice. He was doing this, doing that, you know, and then I got to a point where I'd say to, you know, the guy that I was mainly subbing to, like, hey, listen, I can only do 3 days a week, 2 days a week. You know, if you need any extra hands, I can do week on, week off. And that's how it sort of eventuated. Yeah. So, you know, it wasn't fucking click
no,
your fingers.
It's not like
fucking,
that, no, not at all. It's all just pipe behind, you know, everything kind of has to fall into that place where it all just kind of starts flowing and then you just make that natural progression over. Yeah. And while that was happening, I had a friend and she was moving her Queenslander.
Yeah.
So, you know, and she was giving a red hot go, you know, 27 moving her home on her own. And she did that and the house removalists had let her down because they were going to organize the carpentry. But then they said, oh, our carpenter's gone missing.
Mm.
And so I was like, yeah, can help you out. You know, let's get it sorted. So she was pretty big on Instagram about the house. And with all that and just the natural, you know, just the videos and the shout outs and blah, 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 blah. It kind of just grew from there. And then we were taking on more jobs and there's a real niche market on Instagram now with like everyone having their little project on Instagram and everyone's got their little names to their homes and all this. And it was like,
isn't it funny how that just sort of eventuated?
Yeah. Yeah. And everyone's like, oh, we saw your work on Daisy. This is our house. Rah, rah, rah. And then from there, it was like, I just got on Instagram and it was like, right, what are we doing today, guys? We've got, you know, we've got Monday. We're off to Daisy. Tuesday, we're going to Nudgy Nest.
Yeah.
We're going to Sage on Wednesday. And it was kind of like that. And people would see that and it just grew and grew from there. And then we just found ourselves in that spot of just doing Queenslanders. And I prefer that anyway, because I, you know, I like the thought process. I like the renovation. I like the finished product. Like I'll get a 1980s brick home across my desk and I won't even look at it.
Yeah.
You know, cause it just doesn't interest me.
Yeah.
Whereas like those older homes, you know, I love the history. I love, you know, there's been probably five generations in this one home and you find those little bits and pieces along the way when you're renovating. You might find something scribbled behind a wall or like a, you know, old coin from the, you know, 1901, like all that kind of stuff. And I just like, you know, finding the history of the homes and whatnot. Like who used to live there. Like, I don't know if you've heard of like the Corley Explorer. So it's basically back in 1977 or something like that. This couple drove around Brisbane taking photos of every single house on every single street. And you can go on this Corley Explorer and type in the street, you know, where you are. And hopefully, because the only way the photos are online, if the people in those homes didn't take the photos. So otherwise, it's all been published.
Yeah.
And so there might be a few homes missing because the owners took the prints at the time. But you can see these homes back in the 70s and, you know, what's changed and what's new and, like all that kind of history.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of homeowners. Yeah, a lot of homeowners don't know about it either. So it's a cool thing to be like, hey, look, I found your house from, you know, 1977. You know, look what's still here. Look what hasn't been here. Look what's been, you know, changed over the years. And that's we kind of found us doing that, and then we signed up our first big contract. I remember like getting the email. It was like 10:30, 11 o'clock at night, and we had a project over at Camp Hill and they, you know, were like, yeah, let's go ahead. And it was like 450 grand. At the time that was like, holy shit.
Yeah.
You know, someone's trusting
me. It's always a good moment when that happens.
Yeah. And it was like that first big job, because most of the jobs were like, you know, 100K and below that. But this was the first time of like, you know, someone's actually taking me seriously and, you know, is trusting me with a, you know, even at the time it was, you know, it's, Reno of that size is probably almost like 600, 700 now, but at the time it was like, this is a big fucking deal. And
just for you guys that are listening too, like as Mitch, like as he says this, it's, as you just heard, he made the transition. He had a guy who's doing small jobs, little Renos, bathrooms, like I'm assuming just bits and pieces, like for family, friends. And then obviously just one of those things, as he just said, got on Instagram, got that contact, did this, did that. And then all of a sudden, like, it's not just, I'll reach out to an architect, price a set of plans, boom. You got to obviously build that network, build that relationship with those
and
clients.
And social media is such a huge thing now. People love seeing, like, you know, you take them through the whole build, you know, you take them from the demo stage, you know, here we are stripping it all out, you know, you show them the future plans and like that engagement every single day of you posting like pictures, videos, reels, whatever you want to do, you know, it just does, you know, it does grab people's attention, and people like seeing it from the start to the finish. Yep. Like, you know, everyone posts up there, you know, they're beautiful photos of the finished product, but, you know, they don't see half time where those houses come from.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you'll have the worst house on the street, but people won't see that. They'll see this beautiful finished product, but I think they really enjoy seeing what actually goes.
Yeah, they want to see the nitty gritty of it. They want to see the stuff. Yeah,
and yeah, people even it's like watching a TV show and you see your characters every day, because you know, like, oh, how's Kevin? You know, the chippy guy, because they know him from me. You know, chatting with him and, you know, posting photos about him, and then, like, you know, oh, where's Kevin? You know, oh, where did he go? You know, it's just people do get kind of like, I guess not caught up, but they kind of get like their attention caught, and they're like, wow, what's he doing today?
Mm.
Especially when I was like...
Yeah, they familiarise themselves with you, and it becomes like part of their daily
routine. Like, I don't walk around with the camera in my face going, you know, you know, the weird millennial pause, talking about, you know, what we're doing today. It's more just like pictures, videos of, like, you know, actual work happening.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's just, yeah, I'm not the kind of guy that's going to engage like the company to come over and do like the photo shoots that make you look like you're gonna have a seizure because the video is going 16 loops and I'm not throwing a hammer down, lightning strikes and all that mumbo jumbo. Yeah. Like, it's real. It's,
yeah,
I guess war is the way you'd say. It's just us blokes working on a house.
It's like everyone's got their own niche, and you know, the content that you do today is not going to be the content that you do in 12 months. And I feel like that whole like journey in regards to socials, it's like, I feel like a lot of guys get caught up in, you know, they have to have this person. They have to make something great. They got to make it the best form of content. Like, you know, we've had guys in here that have got really good socials, and, you know, even they've said, like, they're at the point now that, you know, it is what it is. Obviously, you got to keep on brand. Like, your brand is obviously, you know, as you just said, what separates you is you guys are like Queenslanders. You like the journey. You be a little bit raw on socials, like, you know, that's obviously fly at the hip, but for the most part, that is your brand. That's what you want to do. Where other guys like to, you know, they're a little bit more, I wouldn't say lazy, but, you know, they don't want to be in front of the camera and do that sort of stuff. Yeah. So they like showing the finished stuff and nicer photos and doing those videos. So I guess for the most part, you just got to find what works for you. And
yeah, exactly. You know, like, even with like the finished product photos, it's probably, you know, to a point, it probably is to their detriment that they're not doing all those along the way show, you know, videos and pictures and whatnot, because people do take notice, people do see it and want to know what's happening every day. Like, especially like owners, you know, they'll take that picture and go, oh, look what's happening in my house today, look what the boys are doing.
They love it.
It's because people ask, you know, obviously people are doing these big jobs, you know, 700-800k worth of jobs, and you know, family members and friends are like, oh, how's your house going, how's this going, and you know, people want to be like, oh, well, this is what's going on, you know.
Yeah, they
and
love,
they love
it.
All that stuff, you
they
know
love
and
it.
It's And, like, even just to get followers on Top Build, like, I would, like, lay in bed and just follow.
Mm.
Just follow people. I'd go to Greya and go, right, who follows Greya? And go through them and go, right. And then, you know, you might get, you know, 30, 40% of those numbers back, you know, in followers. And then even in the last, I think once we hit the 3K mark, like, that took a long time. But even growing from then, like, we've probably done 300 of those new followers in like 2-3 months, where it probably took, you know, twice as long to do 100 before that. You
it's
know?
A snowball effect.
And it does just grow. Like, I don't sit in bed now like following people. It just happens, you know. And I guess other people shouting yourself out as well, you know.
Collaborations. There's heaps of different avenues that you can take.
Yeah.
You know, everyone's got their own thing. Obviously, there's guys out there that got earlier on in the piece back in the prime days of socials, and they got on it early and stuff like that. But hey, each to their own. Everyone's got their own path. Like for us, I don't even really worry about the numbers. We're just we just do our thing, and you know, it eventually comes. You know, but we're all about the community and stuff like that as well. But yeah, man, like. So obviously, I'm just trying to keep us on track. So you got that contract.
Yeah.
You were then, give us a little bit of a thing. So how many guys did you have? Was it just you and Chippy?
So
was your partner at the time married? Were you guys, was she just doing all the books?
So at that point, Hazel was like 8 months, 7.5 months pregnant
yeah.
with our first. So that was all happening. There was three of us guys. So
yep.
one chippy and an apprentice
yep.
And myself. So basically it was just us three full time.
Yeah.
And then I'd get mates to help out when we needed an extra yep. hand, like I'm doing trusses and whatnot.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I got two or so builders that we kind of bounce back and forth between.
Yeah.
And we use their guys and they use our guys and it kind of works out kind of yep. nice if you need an extra hand. Obviously, yeah, so Hazel was on maternity leave. And then, well, we got about halfway. We got the trusses up and that's when she gave birth.
Yeah.
So I was off work for 2 days,
yeah,
3 days before I had to come back and, mm-hmm. you know, steer the ship right again.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I think the wrong cladding had turned up, not by the wrong order, but just they'd shipped the wrong cladding out.
This happens,
and, yeah. you know, like you go like, how did you not notice it wasn't the wrong cladding, you know, or the right cladding, I mean. Like, the house is in chamferboard, this is weatherboard.
Yeah.
Oh, I just thought you were doing something different.
Yeah.
And, like, like that kind of stuff, you're like, right, so now I've got to give up being with my family, come back to work,
yeah.
get back into it,
yeah.
And just do that. So we did, that was Camp Hill, so we were just slogging away at that, and then,
yeah.
what did we do after Camp Hill? I can't even remember now.
No, so obviously there's a big, you know, there's a big jump. There's a lot of things that people don't talk about when they're talking about the jobs that they're doing, the size of the team. How's your journey been with, you know, systems, processes, employing guys, treating guys, managing guys? How's all that been like?
That is probably one of the biggest challenges we have.
Yeah.
With managing employees and managing subbies and whatnot.
Yeah.
I think even nowadays you do get a lot of, you know, you pay them well,
mm-hmm.
you get paid every week. Like there's a lot of like, I'll scratch your back, but then you wait mm-hmm. for your back to be scratched back and you just kind of go, like, you know, it's a little bit of give, and you don't get the give back. But we do have a pretty good retention. One of our chippies has been with us since he was the start. He was the bloke that was doing those jobs for me when I was working full time. So he's still there. And then we've got another guy that's been with us on and off for about 2.5 years now.
And all full time, or do you?
All full, you're all ABN.
ABN.
Yeah.
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 We've got obviously our apprentices on wages, but yeah. So I think it's just easier with paperwork kind of thing, because I don't do the zero, the invoicing, all the stuff like that. I get the...
Yeah, it's a little bit more flexible as well.
So the boys just send their invoice in Friday afternoon. It's paid by, you know, 4 o'clock Friday afternoon.
Yeah.
And it's just easy because I can do it in my underwear and having a beer.
Yeah.
So I can just go and...
Yeah.
But we've kind of got to the point now where we could probably, to get where I want to be, we need to expand.
Mm-hmm.
So
where is that?
So I kind of want to be taken on, because at the moment we were doing just one big reno and then you have like the fill-in jobs in between, whereas kind of want to be doing 2 to 3 big renos mm-hmm. and then have, you know, the little ones in between that. So, you know.
So you're looking for scale, basically.
We've kind of hit that ceiling where like we could take on more, but it probably wouldn't be worth it with the, you know, timings and whatnot.
Yeah.
So I do think we've hit our ceiling.
Yeah.
And even just like, you know, you put your ad out there, you know, again, paying well, you know, exactly what's expected, and you get the whole same result back, you know, I wouldn't get out of bed for less than that. I wouldn't do this. I wouldn't do that, you know, and you're like, or people that just like the post, you're like, what are you liking it for? Do you want a job, or you just liking it because it's a good looking job, but you don't want it? Like, and that like kind of stuff like that really like just grinds my gears. You're like, why'd you bother liking it?
Yeah.
Just like the ad's there. You either want a job and you want to apply for it,
or
why even bother commenting on it?
Yeah.
And even on like, you know, I've tried on Seek and you get the same thing on Seek. You get blokes. I had one guy apply the other week and his experience to be a leading hand, he had a diploma in helicopter engineering and he had worked in a ramen factory.
Mm.
And that's not even like me taking, that's literally his resume.
Yeah.
And I was like,
nice.
how does that offer anything that I'm after? But Yeah, I think now too with like labor costs and the, you know, obviously the shortage of blokes.
Yeah.
It's it is harder to get.
Yeah.
You know, you're at a point now where you're like, right, do I have to like go on Instagram and start looking through posts of builders who are posting, you know, pictures of their blokes and you know, do I hit them up on their Instagram asking if they want a job?
Trust me, I've been down that path. I think the thing that works for us now, like, we have guys, I wouldn't say lined up, but like there's guys that apply to work for us now. And I think the one thing that you can really double down on, like for even the guys that are listening that are in that same mindset in regards to like it's hard to find guys, is just brand. Like we basically just, we pump that, we show our culture and you know, guy, it's funny.
Yeah, they want to work for you.
Yeah, and the thing is the best employees that you'll ever have, they're not going to be the ones that are chasing the money. That's what I've found. You know, the best guys that I've got, 100%, they could leave me, go and chase an extra $2-3 an hour, right? But that's not what they're after.
Yeah.
And even they'll be the first ones to turn around. They'll be like, they don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
You know, what are they going to get? They're getting an extra $100 a week. Like, you know, they get an extra $100 a week, but then they get all the stresses that come with that. Yeah. You get a shit environment, shit team. You don't enjoy what you don't enjoy going to them. There's no fulfillment. That's what I mean. So like for me, that's what I've learned over time now is the money is what the money is. This is what I pay, right? But I'm not selling. That's not my selling point.
Yeah. I'd rather earn less, but have a good day at work every
exactly,
day.
Exactly. Exactly. So, you know, it's becoming easier for us now because we do show it to the public. We show that, you know, it's not just me saying it.
Mm.
And like even to the point now where we've had a guy recently start and, you know, I just say to him, you know, I just say like, you go do your trial with the team because the boys will talk. If I'm not there, I know deep down, the guys are going to talk numbers. They're going to say what's shit, what's good, what's bad. And it's going to happen eventually anyway.
Mm.
So I just let it happen. Mm. I say to them, go and do your trial, right? Go and speak to the boys. Go and ask them every question that you've got in your head. What's the pay? What does he do? Do we work weekends? What are the hours? And they're going to tell you the fucking truth because I'm not there.
Yeah.
And then usually, well, not usually, but I know now that they come back and they go, yeah, no, I really enjoy working here. Like, it's been good. So like, and you know, I've got enough guys now, as I say to them, I haven't just got a small team that are going to talk shit to your face. Like you can ask an apprentice, you can ask the qualified guys, you can ask the lead chippies and you'll get a feel for it. So like, I don't really need to do a lot of selling anymore in regards to the brand and like what we have. You know, if they're a really good guy and I really want them, I'll sometimes do a little bit. But then it's like one of those things. I feel like if you try to sell too much and you try to, you know, overcommit and, you know, yeah, mate, I'll give you this incentive and it's going to be good. Like, I'm going to do this, that. They've got you over the barrel.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They've got one leg up already and you're fucked. You know, they think that, you know, you can't live without them sort of scenario.
Exactly. And I think that's where it kind of comes into, because they could go somewhere else and could earn more money.
But yeah.
They, you know, and they do know that.
Yeah.
You know, and it wouldn't be hard for them to find a job.
100%.
And so you do have to, you know, I guess not fight for, but you do have to prove that, you know, you boys do want to stay here.
Exactly.
So, and you do half the time go, right, okay, you know,
yeah,
a pay rise, would that help things, you know?
Yeah.
And you do.
Yeah.
I guess, yeah.
I always look at it as like incentivizing in other ways.
Yeah.
That's how I do it. Number one, it comes down to the employment side. Obviously, if you're employing people that are money hungry, that's the number one trigger point. If they're coming to you because you're paying better than old mate next door, that's usually not why I like it. But if it ever gets to the point where I can feel things sort of starting to shift, and we do performance reviews and, you know, there's ways that we can track it to sort of foresee it coming.
Yeah.
I usually try to incentivize not with money, because the money is the short term thing. You know, what's actually the crux of it? And if it's the money and that's the only thing,
then
we shake hands and we part ways.
Yeah.
You know, I can incentivize with, you know, I've got guys, I've got kids, you know, whatever they need to finish early. Like, I'm down, like whatever you want to do,
you can be flexible.
I don't make my guys work weekends. Yeah. We don't work public holidays. They can take leave whenever they want.
Yeah.
You know, we do team days and et cetera, all the time. And I'm very, very fucking transparent with my team. Like, I'm very transparent. I basically, you know, I tell them all honestly what everyone, because the boys are going to all talk.
Yeah.
See, what I wanted as an employer and what I found throughout my time, even as a subbie when I was an apprentice, was always the pay scenario. Mm. Everyone was always, oh, you know, don't know if I can talk about it. You didn't want to ask anyone about it. It was always this like weird mystery thing.
Yeah.
You know, the boss didn't want to fucking, oh, yeah, no, mate, like keep it on the hush hush. Like,
yeah.
I'll stand at the top of the scaff and yell it. Like, I'll, you know, because they're going to fucking talk about it anyway. I've even had it to the point recently where, you know, some guys are on X and then I even say to them, you know, this is between us.
Mm.
And then, little behold, yeah. You find out that.
They find out anyway.
They find out anyway. So yeah. I'm like, I'm not going to get mad at him. I don't care.
Yeah.
Right? But now I know, like, now I know that, like, it's going to happen regardless. Yeah. So.
And, like, I get the money thing. Like, you know, it's shit's expensive nowadays.
Yeah.
And, you know, every little bit does help.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I get that. And it's like, you know, but you can only go.
You can only afford what you can afford.
Some people only have a certain point where their value and what you get out of them surpasses it. And you go, well, I don't want to pay you anymore because I don't get that back.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's just money out of my pocket.
Yeah.
Because I'm not getting that same.
Or do you love the, if you pay me this much more, this is what you'll get out of me. I've had that happen to me before where guys have been
trust me.
You're like, if I go on this much money, like this is what I'm going to get. And I always say to them, how about I make you a deal? You give me that for 3 months and then I'll give you the money, eh?
Yeah.
And they're always like, oh, Lord. But it's one of those things as well. Over time, like with us, is we've instilled, like that's not really something that I even have to worry about anymore.
Mm.
But the guys that are in that thing, you just got to fucking wean that out. Like there are good guys out there. There are guys that you don't need to pay a fucking shit ton because at the end of the day, even in my game, there is a glass ceiling. You can't fucking pay, like...
No,
I think you remember like 12 months ago, people put up ads like, oh, I'll give you $90 an hour, right? Yeah. On wages. Like, I remember seeing all this shit and I had a big meeting with all my guys. Mm. And I say, listen, I'm no dummy. You guys are all seeing what's going on out there with all these rates going on. I said, let me give you the harsh truth, the reality of what's actually going to happen. You go and jump ship, they'll use you for 2 weeks and they'll say, oh, I haven't got any more, right? Mm. Because they're putting this large figure out there to grab you and then... You know, when you're done, you're done. They're just going to move you on because no one in this game can facilitate that at what we're doing.
Yeah.
Right? And that's the fucking reality of it.
Like,
it's the same in construction. There is industry rates that we all have to adhere by, right? Mm-hmm. You can own, like for you, for instance, right? You're not going to price, if a client comes to you with a reno, you know for a fact, maybe they got another builder that they're checking pricing on. Not 9 times out of 10, they mm-hmm. might, right? You're not going to price yourself fucking completely out of the market, right? Regardless of brand. Like, I know guys that have got the best brand in the world, but it doesn't matter. They're still going to price. Like, yes, they might be slightly higher, but at the end of the day, there is fucking an overall market that we all need to adhere by. And if your employer or a potential fucking job, and it sounds too good to be true, let me tell you, it fucking is. Yeah.
That's what drives me insane too, because everyone's like, oh, I'm on $70, I'm on $80 an hour. And you're like, cool, man, sweet. So you want $80 for me. So then I've got to put my markup on top of that. And then I've got to pay you super. Then I've got to pay you GST. Then I've got to, you know, make my little bit back from that. So basically I've got to charge you out at, you know, $155, $160.
It's not going
to
work, though.
Yeah, and then I've got to go, right, so you're here every single day for 5 days a week for, say, 4 months at a time.
Yeah.
So that adds up. What's that? $120,000.
Yeah.
And then I've got to put that into my bill and go, right, your job now costs...
How can you justify it? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's the reality is that's never going to happen.
Yeah.
And so, like, I always say to them, like, if they're like, oh, you know, I need $80 an hour. Yeah, no worries. I'll give you 3 hours a day. Like, because who's going to be able to afford that amount of money on those style jobs, resi jobs, that amount of money for fucking, you know, 40 hours a week?
Yeah.
Every single week for 4 months, like
our labor costs. Our labor costs at the moment, you know, it could be anywhere up to $11,000 a week.
Yeah.
For, you know, us four full time.
Trust me.
And like you're saying, right, you've got to then justify that to the homeowner who then shells at $11,000 every single week to pay for you to be there on site to do their reno, and it's just the job. You know, with the way labor costs and material costs have gone, it's got to a point now where it's either we're the new normal. And everything else has to catch up.
Mm.
And we've just gotten there before everyone else has. Like, just you know, Australia itself.
Mm.
And like people, you know, people are spending $1 million on their reno when that same reno 2-3 years ago probably would have cost $650-700.
Mm.
And you're like, you're literally paying the price of just buying a new home somewhere else to renovate this bucket of crap.
Mm.
You know, why would you spend $1.2 million on a reno when you could buy an investment property for the same price?
That's exactly right.
And it's just, it just, obviously you've got to then turn into the salesman to go, no, you do want to do this.
Mm.
Whereas like, if it was me in their shoes, I wouldn't want to do it because I'm like, why would I pay that much money?
Mm.
And it's just like, cause all, you know, obviously as a builder, you get all your rates in from your trades and your subbies and whatnot. And then you've got to put your markup and profit on top of that. And you go, right, I got a quote yesterday for a pool, you know, stock standard pool, water tiled edge, $117,000. So either the bloke doesn't want it or he's just bonkers. So I'm like, right, so then I'm going to get a $117,000 pool. Then I'm going to put my markup on top of that. So by the time everything's said and done, that pool is going to be like, what, 130, 140 grand? And then I'm going to go to the client and go, I got your brand new pool. It's $140,000. What do you reckon? Like, to me, that sounds ridiculous. I would walk out laughing if someone tried to sell me a $140,000 hole in the ground with water in it. Like, it's just insane. And it's going to get to a point where people won't be able to afford it and they will pull back and the ass is going to fall out of the whole industry because of what everyone's been charging. Like, everyone's been having a great time charging their, you know, their rates because the people have been paying it because they have to pay it because they want their work done. And as a builder, you just, all you do is get them in, put your markup on top, and then you sell the whole job to them. And at the end of the day, all these subbies and trades are making more money for less time on a job than you are when you're the bloke putting your neck out.
And not only that, but you sign the fucking deal as a lifetime deal,
Yeah,
you're getting the calls forever.
Exactly. And it's just, it's one of my little things at the moment. It's like, why should I put myself through all this stress and bullshit when, you know, a concrete polisher could be on site for 3 days and earn 14 grand? It's, and again, it's not 14 grand. It's probably about 20 grand by the time everything else goes on top of it. And it's just you constantly trying to sell this, because I know with some builders, they just send a quote out and it's just got the one figure on it. There you go, that's your house, you know, $960,000. Whereas mine's all broken down, you know, the plumbing costs this much, the electrical costs this much, you know, it's all shown there for the client. Because if I was spending $1 million with someone, you'd be bloody expected to be, you know, showing where the money goes, you know? And it's, I try and be as transparent as I can because it is a big risk that someone's taking. It is a lot of money. It is a lot of, you know, blood, sweat and tears on their end to then go, right, I'm going to trust $1 million of probably financed money. So money that they've got to pay back for 30 years. So, you know, obviously that $1 million is probably worth 1.6, 1.7 by the time interest is put on top of it. You know, it's not short change, not, you know, tiny change. It's big money.
And it all just stems from like labor and all that sort of stuff. And obviously this, you know, the rate, like interest rates, and I get it. I get it. But as I explained to all the guys, like, it's a lot easier to give someone a pay increase, but good luck trying to have the conversation with someone when you try to give them a pay decrease. It's not going to happen. They're just going to lose their job. Going to lose their job. That's why I say to all of them, I said, giving a pay increase is easy. But then when push comes to shove, when expenses hit the roof and, you know, we can no longer afford it, the most expensive people are going to be the people to go first.
Oh, 100%.
So, but hey, anyway, all right, keeping on. No, it's been good. We've crossed off heaps of shit. So, keeping on. So now, obviously, fast forward to today.
Yeah.
Give us a little bit of an insight in regards to what it sort of looks like at the moment. What's your structure like? How many guys have you got currently at the moment?
So we still got the four of us.
Yeah.
We've got a bloke leaving soon to go to another company. So we're in the process of trying to find some new subbies.
Yeah.
I'm looking to put on two blokes.
Yeah. And will you eventually ever shift that over to like a full-time setup, or do you love running that subby model?
I think I like the subby model.
Yeah.
Obviously, I think this might stir up a few things. I think when people are on full time, mm-hmm. I think they have a bit of a idea to, you know, if they're sick or they're, mm-hmm. if they want to go somewhere, they know mm-hmm. they're going to get paid. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, power to them, you know, nothing wrong with that. That's mm-hmm. what it is. But, you know, I do feel there's a mentality change when you are a subby, because you know that if you don't work, you're not getting paid.
Yeah.
So, you know, you do turn up. You got a bit of a cold. You're going to turn up.
Yeah.
Because you have to, you know. And but at the same time, like, you know, I'm not the bloke that's going to be like, you've got to come to work and you've got to be here. You know, if you're sick, you're sick. You know, it is what it is, you know, and we'll work it out. Like, it's fine.
Yeah.
It's just when people know they've got sick leave banked up, when they know they've got holiday pay banked up, when they've, you know, all their annual leave, they know that's there.
They're going to use it.
They might be like, oh, you know, I'm a bit tired from that weekend, you know. Mm. I might just stay in bed.
Yeah.
You know, and I remember I got another mate, and, you know, he had a carpenter, and it was the same deal. It was, you know, he'd constantly be sick, he'd constantly be away. And I was like, mate, just try it. Put him on subby rates and see what happens.
Mm.
And it was almost night and day.
Mm. Complete polar opposites.
Yeah, because he, old mate, had to turn up to work to get paid.
Yeah.
But I think the subby model, I think it's just easier.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's what I mean. Each to their own. Like, for us personally, we all our staff are on the books.
Mm.
That just suits me a little bit better. And I think it's more, you know, security at my front as well. You know, I know how many guys I got. I know they're not going to leave me. Like, obviously they can leave. But I just mean, that's just like, for us anyway, that's the model that we feel comfortable with running. But so now we're coming to the end. We've been talking for a little bit now. Time has gone like that. But we're coming to the end of this episode anyway, and I feel like there is a lot more stuff that we can, you know, we can talk about, and I definitely feel like we should do a number two. But on each podcast we have a little bit of a segment.
Yeah.
It's a fire round segment. So I ask you basically 5 questions and you just gotta answer them the best that you can.
Yeah.
So they're all relative to general stuff. All right. So here we go.
Yeah.
Would you rather work in the scorching heat or the freezing cold?
Scorching heat.
Ooh, okay. See, a lot of guys say they like going in the cold and they can rug up. When you're in the heat, the only option is you just take off all your clothes.
Yeah, that's true.
All right, so scorching heat. All right, morning person or night owl?
Night owl.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, best piece of advice you've ever received?
Oh, probably just the sink or swim. Just get there and get it done.
Yeah. Just give it a go.
Yeah.
You know, you got nothing to lose.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. Favorite construction project you've ever worked on? Favorite job?
Probably my house.
Your own house? Yeah. Beautiful. All right. And one thing you can't live without on site besides tools?
Radio.
Yeah.
Music. Beautiful. Bluetooth.
All right. All right, guys. Well, that's it for this episode. I feel like it's gone in about 5 minutes, but it's actually been running for a while. So, you know, I hope you guys that are listening got some insight into what happens on site with Mitch and his team over at Top Build. So, Mitch, thank you for coming in.
Thank you very much.
We'll definitely have to run this back and do another episode. But, thank you for coming in and sharing, you know, a little bit of your journey, some, you know, tips and tricks for you young guys that are listening anyway. There's definitely some golden nuggets in there. And, thanks again.
Thank you very much.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to this week's episode. If something hit home for you, it would mean the absolute world to us if you could like and share this podcast with someone else that would benefit from it. Tune into next week's episode, as this will be one that you don't want to miss.